Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Ryan Repka, driver of the number 14 Reynolds Racing Chassis Late Model. You're listening to Thursday Night Thunder on Speedway Digest Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the August 27th edition of Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder, episode 51 of the series. I'm your host, Adam Jason Sinclair, and on tonight's program, Michael Mullally and myself will be talking stock cars, IndyCar, and more. For normal listeners of this program, you'll notice that we've been off the air for a couple of weeks. We took a little bit of time off to explore the great city of New Orleans, Louisiana. And it was a great trip, and I'd highly recommend visiting if you haven't already. This is the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, and they're having a lot of events going on there this weekend, so I'm rather happy that we didn't end up going there this weekend, but we did go over the past few weeks, and it was an interesting experience, to say the least. I'm currently covering it for Palm Beach Happening, which you can find at palmbeach.happeningmag.com. I'm covering it on Travel Tuesday, so if you're interested, take a look at this past week. I did a little bit about the Garden District. Next week will be about the Audubon Nature Institute. And following that, I'll be doing some work about some stories about the French Quarter, as well as the Steamboat Natchez and other different attractions in and around the city. Back to racing. Our first guest this evening is Quinn Hoff, a 17-year-old from Wires Cave, Virginia. Hoff started his racing career at the age of 8, racing go-karts. He won over 20 races in his first season, taking home a championship and Rookie of the Year honors at his hometown track. At 9 years of age, he moved up to Mini Cup cars and earned a third-place championship finish in his first season. By 10 years old, Quinn knew he wanted racing to be his career. He began racing limited late models at the age of 13. As soon as he turned 14, he obtained his NASCAR license and won Rookie of the Year honors and a top 10 championship points finish at the Motor Mile Speedway. In 2014, Hoff went on to win the UNOH Youth Achievement Award at the Motor Mile Speedway, along with another top 10 in championship points. He has consistently finished in the top 10 at both South Boston Speedway and the Motor Mile Speedway. In 2015, he joined the LFR Driver Development Group, owned by Rob Fuller. He has been racing the number 17 Victory Weekend race car in the Cars Super Late Model Tour. So far this season, he has visited Victory Lane with a win at the Tri-County Motor Speedway. He has also secured 2 top 5s, 3 top 10s, and 2 outside poles. Hoff recently got the opportunity to race the Lucas Oil Raceway in Indianapolis with the LFR Driver Development Group. Despite being his first time at the track, he secured a 6th-place finish. We're also going to be talking to his car owner, Rob Fuller, of Rob Fuller Motorsports and the LFR Corporation. He'll be calling in a little bit later this evening as well. Now, we'd like to, as all of you probably know, this weekend, we unfortunately lost Justin Wilson in a race in IndyCar at the Pocono International Raceway. We'd now like to have a moment of silence in his honor. Justin Wilson was not one of the marquee drivers in the series. He wasn't the sort of guy who made lots of money. He was trying to, of course. Everybody always tries to make lots of money in racing, but he wasn't the sort of person who was involved in a lot of advertising. He wasn't the sort of guy who was who brought his own sponsors with him. So they've currently set up a site to help his family out with expenses. You can check out IndyCar.com. They have information about that on there. They also have it on the Facebook page for IndyCar. I'm quite certain if you went to the Andretti Sport page, there's also information about it there. We don't cover the IndyCar series on this program very much. When we do, we have a very good discussion about it, but we've tried to focus on other racing series on this particular program. It is unfortunate that it takes an accident such as this to bring up the changes that might need to be made in the future of the sport. There have been quite a few different images come out in the past few days about the future of IndyCar, where they think that they might be able to go to a closed cockpit. Some people think that might be the answer. You never know. There has been some discussion comparing it to the dragsters in the NHRA, where a lot of the top fuel guys went to closed cockpits, and it's actually been a little, maybe a teeny bit of an advantage for some of the closed cockpit guys, but it's not really about speed. Most of it is about safety. As you look at the different designs, there are some great looking cars out there that they have been put forward for the closed cockpit thing in IndyCar. IndyCar is in discussions, very early discussions, obviously, about possibly doing that. They've had it on the drawing board for a while now. The FIA, however, is going to be doing some testing of closed cockpit cars. And personally, I think that the FIA Formula E Series would be the first logical step to have the closed cockpit cars in. Moving on from there into possibly Formula One in the future, you never know. It will be a definite change in the sport. But change is a good thing in most cases, especially in racing. I know that they would definitely not have a convertible series in NASCAR anymore nowadays because of the different safety innovations. You can have people's helmets and the seats and everything else, but if your head's exposed, it's not a good thing. Roll bars help, but they don't help when you've got big pieces of equipment flying through the air. One of the things that I'm sure IndyCar is worried about, that their insurance people are definitely worried about, is the fact that if that piece of debris had wrapped into the grandstands as opposed to going into the other cars, it would have caused the death of more than just one person. It probably would have caused the death of a few people. And you can't have that. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, we have discussed NHRA on this program a couple times. The NHRA has done a lot of work in trying to basically strap the cars together so that none of the pieces will be able to go out into the grandstands. They have the body strapped down, they have engine straps, they have all sorts of different safety strap devices, and possibly that the IndyCar series will have to look into that in the future. I'm sure that they've got a lot on their plate right now. Their next race is coming up. It will be the last race of the 2015 season, but I'm sure it will be a really busy off season for them. And they have a lot of decisions to make that aren't really good decisions, especially since the Mark Miles there, the Holman Corporation, is currently the CEO of IndyCar. I'm sure he's got the best people he can find trying to help him to make those decisions, but it's definitely not the sort of thing I'd want to do myself. This weekend is another one of the off weekends for NASCAR for the Sprint Cup Series. They've got a bunch of people on different vacation things. They just had the announcement that Kurt Busch is getting engaged, so congratulations to Kurt Busch for that. But there is racing this weekend in the Camping World Truck Series, as well as in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. So I look forward to seeing how those races go. It is a Canadian swing, so it'll be cool to see how the cars do up there in Canada. As I stated a few moments ago, you're currently standing by for Quinn Hoff to call into the program. Quinn Hoff is a racer in the CARS Super Late Model Tour for LFR Driver Development Group, owned by Rob Fuller. Rob Fuller will also be on the program. He's scheduled to be on the program later this evening. While we're standing by, we'll go ahead and play a little bit of the short track racing song that we've had on this program before. Once again, that was Short Track Racing by Ron Pastana and the Pit Crew. We'd now like to welcome Quinn Hoff to the program. Hello, how you doing this evening?
Good, you?
Not too bad. First off, how have you been enjoying your time with the LFR Driver Development Group?
Ever since I joined LFR this year, it's been really great. Going into this year, we've been a brand new team, and we didn't really know what to expect, but we hit the ground running for sure, and it's just been going really well for us.
What are your goals for the 2015 season?
Going into 2015 racing season, my goals were just to go to every racetrack on the tour and be competitive and let people know that we were there. And I believe we've done that so far, getting an outside pole multiple times and winning a race so far. We're definitely going to tracks and being competitive, and that's all I could ever ask for.
What's your favorite track to compete on?
My favorite track would be Motor Mile Speedway. That's where I started racing stock cars, and it's just been a favorite to me. It's the closest track that I race at to my hometown. So I'd have to say that Motor Mile Speedway is probably my favorite racetrack.
And what's your ultimate racing goal?
My ultimate racing goal is just to find somewhere in the racing world, hopefully behind the wheel somewhere, where I'm making a career out of what I love and spreading what I do to the community all around the racing world and outside the racing world as well.
What's your most memorable racing moment?
My most memorable racing moment is probably one of my mini cup wins back when I was younger. I won the race, and as I was getting out of the car to get the checkered flag, my brother, who has special needs, was running down the fence line, you know, cheering and screaming my name, and it was really touching to me and meant a lot, and I'll probably never forget that moment.
I know you race in the CARS Super Late Model Tour. They've had some changes this season, where last year they were more of the stock cars, similar to the the NASCAR series and all that, and this year they've gone more to the late models and then the other series that they're running. How do you think they're doing this year?
The Cars Tour has attracted a lot of attention, I believe, for being a new series, and I think it's doing really well. They're new and they're adjusting, and it's good that they're open to adjustments and making their series better for the fans and the racers. So I believe that they're doing well, and I hope they do it again next year.
In a lot of the major races now, there seems to be a lack of fan participation and pretty much a lack of fans showing up at the racetracks now. How would you change that? How would you try and get more people to show up at the racetrack?
I would try to get more people at the racetrack by I would do it personally through social media and maybe doing a little bit more gate prizes. And the car store is doing really well with interacting the drivers with the crowd, and I think that's starting to pick up the crowd. The crowds at the car store races have been fairly good, and the racing is for sure top notch, I believe. Just some more off-track stuff for the fans to enjoy, I believe, will help the viewing grow.
And who is your favorite driver in the NASCAR Cup Series?
My favorite driver in the NASCAR Cup Series would probably be Kyle Busch, because he just, nothing really matters to him but getting behind that wheel and winning a race, no matter what the cost.
And have you ever had any interaction with any of the current Cup drivers, and which one has been most helpful with you so far?
I've had interactions with a lot of people, past and current Cup drivers. I see Kyle Busch at the Cars Tour races. When he was out of contention with a broken leg, he came to a few Cars Tour races. I talked to Joey Logano, Denny Hamlin. I raced Denny Hamlin Foundation race, so I got to see Matt Kenseth and all of them race out there with them. So that was pretty special. But I've never really gotten too much help from them on the racing side on what to do on a racetrack. But they've all been really nice and personal, and it's just hope to meet more of them soon.
And what's your favorite track on the Cup Series? Which track would you think you'd do the best on there?
That's a hard question, but it would probably be Martinsville, just because I've grown up on short tracks, and I believe Martinsville would be most familiar to me to run.
I know that some of the big issues in motorsports now is trying to find a good sponsor. How has your experience been with sponsors, and what advice would you give an up-and-coming driver who's trying to find a good deal to sponsor them in racing?
Yeah, that's the name of the game for racing is sponsorship and marketability, and it's a very tough field. From my personal experiences getting sponsors, we've promoted other things other than the sponsor. A lot of sponsors don't want to be on the car. So we promote ourselves through foundations such as the breast cancer stuff we're running this year. And I've run FTA in the past and some local ministries from my hometown. And that seems to help kind of sell somewhat of the sponsors I've gotten so far. But it's definitely a tough game to play in to get in, and that's how you get farther racing.
Do you have any plans on racing in any other series aside from the Cars series this year?
This year we've been just doing the Super Late Models and the Cars Tour series. We raced one time out at Indiana at the Lucas Oil Raceway in the CRA JEG series, and that was a good time. And we have a few more late model races, probably be at Martinsville with the late model team on that side, and maybe throw together some bigger Super Series races, but nothing for sure yet.
I made a few comments earlier in the program about the fact that safety is definitely a moving target in motorsports. With the recent accident and untimely death of Justin Wilson, what changes do you think should be made to make auto racing safer?
The stock car in NASCAR has done really well with their safety, I believe. These cars are safer than they've ever been. Open wheel stuff like Indy cars and that's higher speeds and it's a lot more dangerous and there's a lot more car around them. With that specific event and a few events from the past years on that safety part, I think Indy cars need an overhead canopy. I know they're open wheel and open cockpit cars, but I think they need like an open overhead glass to cover them up, and I think that'll help them not have as many injuries or deaths in that series. But can't say enough about NASCAR and the stock car series around and all their safety and keeping these drivers safe so we can go out there and race the hardest we can.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the program this evening and wish you lots of luck in the car series and in your future career as well.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, and have a nice evening.
All right, you too. Bye.
Once again, that was Quinn Hoff of the LFR Driver Development Group, owned by Rob Fuller, who races in the Cars Super Late Model Tour as well as a few other series. Our next guest tonight is Rob Fuller, Quinn's team owner. As someone that Dale Earnhardt described as having a bunch of natural ability in a race car, you could say that Rob Fuller was born with a checkered flag in his hand. At the age of 5, in Thompson, Connecticut, Rob was already beginning his career in motorsports. While his dad Bobby was shattering NASCAR records in the late models, Rob was across the parking lot competing in the quarter midget class. Meanwhile, Rob's uncle, Jeff Fuller, was beginning to gain notoriety after winning the 1992 NASCAR Modified Series Championship. Jeff progressed into the NASCAR Busch Series in 1995, where he was named Rookie of the Year, while also finishing in the top 10 in the NBS final standings. The following year, Jeff earned his first win from the pole position at Bristol Motor Speedway. Rob graduated high school and moved to North Carolina in 1995 to help his uncle Jeff, who had just begun his NASCAR Nationwide Series, at that time NASCAR Busch Series, driving career. Rob quickly gained notoriety in the NASCAR garage as the fastest gun in town, with his rear tire changing skills. Pitting drivers like Rusty Wallace, Ryan Newman, and Dale Earnhardt Jr., Rob earned the title as the fastest tire changer in NASCAR. While Rob enjoyed driving his own car from time to time, he decided to venture into the technical side of the sport, joining the vehicle dynamics department at Penske Racing. Newly developed skills led Rob to 9 poles in 9 attempts and an average finish of 4.2 in his NASCAR late model at Concord Speedway in 2004. That same year, Rob moved to Dale Earnhardt Incorporated, where he was appointed head of the vehicle dynamics department. By this point, Rob had visited Victory Lane 48 times on NASCAR's two largest stages. So when Dale Earnhardt Jr. announced that he was leaving the organization in 2007, Rob took it as an opportunity to branch out on his own. Fuller's experience and innovative approach to building race cars led to the acquirement of Steve Levitt's chassis business and the creation of LFR Chassis, where he is now the head. We'd now like to welcome Rob Fuller to the program. Hello, and thanks for coming on.
Hey, how are you?
Not too bad. As I was just stating, your family history in racing has been well documented. But if you weren't involved in racing, what would you be doing?
Good. That's a good question. Probably working at Lowe's. we've been racing pretty much our whole lives, and that's about all we've been doing. My dad started when he was 16, 17 years old, and we just started going to the racetrack at Westboro Speedway in about 1978 or 79 when I was old enough to go around with my mom. But like I said, there's not a whole lot of options here. Racing has been pretty much everything we've done, and we've been fortunate enough to have some success at it.
With all your experience as both a car driver, crew member, and now a car owner, what is your opinion of the state of racing in the 21st century?
At the level that we're doing it, I think it's really good. I mean, the short track racing has come a long ways. It's growing. The fields are finally starting to, you know, be 20, 30, 40 cars every time you go. At the higher levels, I'm a little bit nervous. You know, NASCAR's rule changes and, you know, decline to viewership is always a fear. But As long as the stuff that we're involved in is continuing to grow, I think it looks pretty good, to be honest with you.
You just mentioned the NASCAR, their decline in ratings and their obvious decline in sales, especially in some of the bigger tracks. What would you do to try and get people more interested in auto racing?
I think at that level, the market's flooded. You know, they race 35, 36 times a year. You know, I mean, if it was up to me, I would go to every single racetrack once. Mm-hmm. I would shorten the distance of the races. I mean, who's got 4 hours on a Sunday to sit there and watch a race? You know, in today's economy, people are working, you know, and they're working 6 days, sometimes 7 days a week. And, you know, to carve out 4 hours on a Sunday, you know, to watch a race is very difficult to do. You know, if they cut the distances in half, they would save the race teams a lot of money. The interest, I think, would be increased because 90% of the people out there just tune in for the last 50 or 100 laps anyway. And if they just went to the venues one time, it wouldn't be an excuse in the fans' eyes of, I'll get them next time. Or if I don't see them in June, I'll see them in September. Or if I don't go to Daytona in February, I'll go in July. You know, if it was a one-time trip to that area, I think that the attendance would be way up and they'd see an increased viewership.
What's your favorite racetrack, both in the NASCAR series and in the car series that you do most of your racing in now?
I gotta say my favorite probably is Loudon. That's something that, you know, I have a lot of laps there in a truck and the modified, and it's close to home. I love the Lake Winnipesaukee area. In the cars tour, I'd probably say that Motor Mile is probably my favorite track in that series. It's a fantastic facility. It's fast, it's smooth. The food is great. The stands are well kept. It's a great family experience to take a family of four to Motor Mile. You don't have to feel like you need a tetanus shot when you leave it.
I mentioned a little bit with Quinn a few minutes ago, but we can all agree that safety is definitely a moving target. And with the recent accident and untimely death of Justin Wilson, what changes do you think should be made to make auto racing safer?
I mean, they've come forward in leaps and bounds between the soft walls, the helmets these guys are using, the seat, the technology behind the seat manufacturing. At the end of the day, racing is a very dangerous sport, and I think that's some of its attraction. You know, it's definitely a terrible thing when somebody loses a life in the industry, but in those cars especially. I mean, those are cars where the driver's head is exposed. I mean, it's very, very dangerous. I mean, to do anything, you'd have to encapsulate the driver in those cars, which would be very difficult to do. I think that's the next thing that they can do. I mean, when a piece of debris, you know, strikes a helmet, I mean, there's not a whole lot that the series can do or the helmet manufacturer can do or anybody can do in that circumstance other than put the driver in some kind of containment, you know, where his head isn't exposed to the elements.
Yeah. What is it like to work with a legendary figure in the sport like Tony Urie Jr.?
Tony Jr. and I, actually, we go way back. I met him in 1997, actually. We worked on Steve Parks' Nationwide car, which was a great experience. And then we had Dale Jr. And it's a cool deal here because we won two championships and, you know, probably 25 races in that series in 3 years. A very, very successful race team that we had there. And I'm fortunate enough to have four of the seven members of that team working for me currently at LFR Chassis. Tony Jr. was actually in my wedding. He's a very close friend of mine. And I think it's great that I have somebody that I can trust and confide in. And I know is looking out for my best interests, you know, helping run a company that's growing at this rate. So he's very accomplished. Obviously, his history speaks for itself. And these cars that we're building now, these super late models, basically are an older design cup car. We kind of redesigned what Steve Levitt had done and really integrated the technology that the cup cars have. So if you looked at a cup car in 2008, it's very similar to the cars that we're building now. And who better to have on your side than somebody with a track record like that? So it's been great. Every employee we have here is very valuable. He's obviously you know, he's got a big name. It helps the company with his publicity and his popularity. His work ethic is second to none. Tony Urie Sr. is actually here, his dad, and I think it's really cool that, you know, we've got something here that keeps those two working together, and the success that they've had together can carry over to definitely launching this company into what it is today. I mean, in 16 months, we've sold 71 race cars. So I'm not going to complain about what we've got going on, and they're a big reason of it for it.
Well, that's pretty awesome. Now I'd like to turn it out to Michael Mullally and Afraid of Washington, who has a couple of questions for you as well.
Sure.
Who is one person you really look up to in the racing world?
God, I mean, that's probably a two-part answer. I'd have to say, you know, one is Dale Earnhardt. I got to meet him in 97, and just the way that man operated his business, the way he treated people, his work ethic was amazing. He was a fierce competitor, and he's always been somebody, you know, that runs through my mind as, you know, would he be proud or would he approve of what I'm doing, or would he, you know, how would he approach this issue that I'm faced with? And, you know, after watching him and being around him for as long as I was, I'd have to say he's probably the biggest mentor of mine currently, you know, that's still with us today. You know, Tony Urie Sr., he's going to be high on that list. I mean, the guy, you know, has accomplished so much racing so long. I mean, the amount of knowledge that he's got in his brain is just, it's unbelievable, and it's an amazing resource to have him at our shop and have his presence here to pick on, you know, even little things, just experience in not only designing race cars and building race cars, but while we're at the racetrack. You know, that guy, he can see stuff that other people can't see. And when you've got young drivers that, you know, don't have a lot of experience, to have him around those guys is just huge. So those two guys, you know, are probably two that pop into my head right away.
What is your greatest racing memory?
God, there's a couple. There's probably, I'd have to say my first win was really cool. I had my Uncle Jeff spotting for me. We won a pretty big race up at Hickory Motor Speedway in a late model. That was a pretty big day, and probably being a part of Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s first win at Texas Motor Speedway. We had built a pretty strong company over there, and nobody was really knowing what to expect out of this kid. And, you know, in the fourth or fifth race in the car, he pulls off the win in a dominating fashion. I can't remember what I had for breakfast, but I'll remember those 2 days probably as long as I live.
If you could change anything about the world of racing, what would you change?
Probably the influence of the dollar. It seems like, you know, you've got to have so much money in this industry to be successful. And I just, it's unfortunate, and I don't know what to do to change it. But, you know, if there was any way to turn back time where, you know, a guy that, you know, didn't have any full-time guys and didn't have a full-time sponsor was a threat to win, you know, that was always cool. When you showed up to the racetrack and 15 or 20 cars could win the race, you know, that made for a great race. But when you know, the higher you get in this and the more competitive you get, now it seems like you get a race, somebody that doesn't have a whole lot of experience, but, you know, has the funding to do it. And it's just frustrating when you're one of those guys that you feel like you have the talent, but you just don't have the funding behind you. So if there was a way to change that, that would probably be it.
And what advice would you give up-and-coming drivers on how to find sponsorship?
Don't give up. I'm actually fortunate enough to have a fully funded race team that I own in the NASCAR Modified Series. 1540 Connection is a early cancer detection nonprofit, and they're telling people between the age group of 15 and 40 to get themselves checked out for cancer and catch it at an early stage, and you'll have more success fighting it. So I'm very diligent. I know, you know, what sponsors are looking for. You know, you got to figure out, okay, where am I racing? What market am I going after? What's my demographic that I'm currently involved with? You've just got to know what they're looking for and be persistent. And until they say no, they're not interested, just keep going. You know, just keep, you know, keeping up with yourself and social media and making yourself relevant in the sport. That's what they want. You know, they want somebody that is never going to give up. You know, that's the kind of person they're going to want standing behind the company. So, you know, when you're chasing sponsors, just go above and beyond it and never give up. Consistently make the phone calls, send the emails, you know, and when they see how persistent you are and how hardworking you are, you might end up landing a sponsor.
Do you prefer to drive the race cars or be a crew member for the race car?
They both have their pros and cons. I could go either way. The thing that I miss, it's been a year now since I've driven after the company that I had started. And the only thing I miss is sitting in a race car for an hour and a half with nobody calling me, nobody texting me, no emails, and I've got one thing to focus on. That was always something really good. But on the outside of the race car, the driver can only do so much. I enjoy the technical side of the cars, and, you know, I feel good when I make a change to a race car and the driver comes over the radio and says, man, that was great. You know, it's exactly what I needed. So I could go either way on that one. A lot of people say that, oh, you want to drive, but that's not the case. I actually feel more valuable outside of the race car than I do in.
I know LFR Racing, LFR Chassis concentrates on the late model cars. Do you have any plans on expanding the chassis works into other series as well?
Well, we have the asphalt modifieds and we have the super late models. They're very similar in characteristics and design. We're so busy with that right now, to be honest with you. We talked about doing some K&N stuff, and we talked about the dirt. But I mean, at the end of the day, we're very successful because we have people working here that have a brilliant past in this industry. You know, my history with the modifieds has gotten us where we're at with the modifieds, and you know, you've got guys like Tony Jr., Tony Sr., Jeff Foltz on the full bodied cars, which is why we're having so much success over there. So it would be difficult for us to venture into something that we don't have familiarity in, and I just think it'll be more difficult to have success doing that than it is to be doing what we've got. And right now we're probably 11 cars back ordered, so until we're all sitting around wondering what we're going to do next, I don't think we need to go down that road.
How do you feel about the composite body cars they're using in ARCA now as opposed to the other styles?
I like it. It goes back to what we talked about 5 minutes ago. It's a better opportunity for the team owners. It's less money. You don't have to have a body hanger on your payroll. I mean, they pretty much go together like a puzzle. So you don't have to be a very experienced, you know, wind tunnel, you know, experience with rolling roads. You buy a body and it is what it is. You don't have to have a English wheel and a guy that knows how to run the English wheel. And, you know, it goes back to what I was saying. I wish that they could make it more affordable, and I think that's definitely a step in the right direction.
If you were the person who was in charge of, let's just say you were in charge of the car series for one day, what changes would you make in that series to make it better?
I'll be honest with you. They've made some changes. I was just talking with somebody about this today. They had issues with their restart. And I spoke with Chris, series director, and I expressed my concerns and explained to him my thought process behind my concerns, and they made a rule change. They put in a starting box instead of a starting line. So they've got a great deal going on there. The only thing that I would change is the amount of time you're at a racetrack. Nobody likes downtime, you know. So when you get to a racetrack and you're there for 12 hours to run 125 laps, it gets kind of old. You know, that's the one thing that I really enjoy about the dirt stuff. You know, you go to a dirt race, they do hot laps for three laps. They use qualifying in their hot lap session, and then they line up their feature, and you're out of there in 3 hours. You know, if I was in charge of that deal for one day, I would open the gates at noon. I'd have practice from 1 to 2. We'd use the practice feeds as qualifying, and we'd go right to the race, you know, and then get out of there at 8 o'clock at night. It's difficult to get fans in the stands, you know, when you got a sport that's 40% of your base fan is a kid, you know, and you go to the race, you can't keep your kid up till 1 o'clock in the morning. Nobody wants to do that. It messes up the next day. You know, if you could get in there, pay $25 for a ticket, you know, watch practice and qualifying is the same, watch your race and be home at 8 o'clock at night, I think that they'd see a little bit more attendance.
And hopefully that not only the car series, but NASCAR takes some of those hints in the future, because they've definitely got some issues with that as well, especially that was demonstrated quite a bit at Daytona this summer. It was a little bit much.
There's no reason in the world why race teams should be at a racetrack for 4 days. That's asinine, you know, and the hotels in the area all take advantage of that situation. So the hotel rooms are $250 a night, and they're three-night minimums only because NASCAR's in town. So everything is going against the race fan. You know, they're making it impossible to enjoy these races and afford. Who can afford to bring a family of four to the races these days? You know, you have to put $1,000 aside. Nobody wants to do that when you can sit at home and watch it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to thank you very much indeed for coming on the program this evening and wish you lots of luck with the company and everything you're doing this season and in the future.
All right, no problem. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.
All right, have a good night.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Once again, that was Rob Fuller of LFR Chassis and Rob Fuller Motorsports. And we were delighted to have him on this evening. He has some great insights. And as I was saying, hopefully the NASCAR series and other series as well take some of that advice to heart, because that would definitely solve some of the problems they've got currently today. So how has your 2 weeks been since you haven't been on the air?
Really busy, actually. Like, I was like, 2 weeks. What am I going to do? And then I was like, wow, I literally have no time to do anything I want to do.
It's been a difficult transition trying to get back into the swing of things after being out of town for like 9 days. But I think I'm starting to get back into it now. And hopefully everything comes together. The SpeedwayDigest.com, I did a few articles for them this week. I didn't do quite as many as I was hoping, But as I stated in earlier communications there, I had like 300 articles that were that I whittled down to less than 20, because a lot of the stuff I get is not the best thing you wanted to share with the whole world. But it all worked out, and racing kept going on, and we've got lots of stuff planned for the future in this program, and hopefully everybody enjoys it.
Did you do anything exciting, like your trip?
Everything. It was the whole trip was really good. The flying out to New Orleans was pretty cool. There was no turbulence or anything on the way out. Nothing, no issues that we got on the way back. And that was just stupid. It's an old plane, and the air conditioning was bad. But going out there was neat. The city was amazing. The people were very polite. Even the homeless people were polite and said, thank you very much and have a nice day. It was kind of funny. Lots of stuff to do. All the museums were amazing. All the tours were pretty cool. And there's the food was great. The drinking culture there is insane. I don't understand how they can actually get things done with the fact they've got alcohol in every single store. I mean, you can go up to probably go into McDonald's and get some alcoholic beverage there too, but It was definitely a different experience. It was pretty cool, and I can't wait to get back there sometime in the future.
Yeah, that definitely sounds fun.
Mhm. It was pretty neat, and I'm actually rather happy that we went there when we did, and the president is there today, so that's a little bit too much to deal with. The president's there today. President Bush will be there tomorrow. President Clinton will be there over the weekend. Happy we missed all that excitement, because we were there. It was a relatively slow time. Didn't have to wait in line for anything. Didn't have to worry about waiting for tables. And a couple of the restaurants we were in, we were the only table in the entire place. So it was pretty neat.
Wow. Where are you going to go next?
Orlando. That's the easy place to go from here. We'll be going up to Disney World in about another 3 weeks, I think. Going up for the first night of the Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Party. Very Merry Christmas. Mickey's Not-So-Scary Halloween Party, rather, which is September 18th. I think it's the second night of the party there. And that should be entertaining. That was pretty cool last year, all the seeing everybody in costume and getting really, really big bags of candy everywhere. So, take care of your sweet tooth for a few weeks.
Can't go wrong with that.
Exactly. Have you done any racing in the past couple of weeks? Or you still been working on trying to get your schedule figured out that way?
No. Well, we were going to do some racing. Got the car all put back together, and we started it, and it sounded good. And then 10 minutes later, it started knocking. And we were like, really? So my friend from Spokane gave us a few parts. Well, he volunteered it. But anyways, so we got the motor running 2 days ago. And I'm happy to say that for the first time in like a month, our pink Pinto will be at the racetrack this weekend.
Awesome. You going to be driving, yep, or will your brother be behind the wheel again?
Oh, he will not be behind the wheel again.
You're not going to let him run it into the wall and bend it all to pieces?
Not this time.
There you go. Well, I wish you lots of luck this weekend, and hopefully next week you'll be talking about your trip to Victory Lane.
Yeah, you're optimistic. I like your attitude.
There you go. Be sure to check out past episodes of Thursday Night Thunder as well as the other shows on the Speedway Digest Radio Network at SpeedwayDigestRadioNetwork.com. You can also check out the show on Facebook by searching for Speedway Digest Thursday Night Thunder in the search bar or by simply going to Facebook.com/SD Thursday Night Thunder. I also invite you to read all the articles covering aspects of motorsports at SpeedwayDigest.com. Check out the racing news section. I also did some articles this past week about the Xfinity Series and Benny Gordon, who we've had on the program before. So be sure to check that out as well.
Thank you for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again next week in the Thunderdome when we hope to be discussing the world of NASCAR with a representative from Bosch Aftermarket.
Have a nice evening, and we'll talk to you next week.